At the bottom of our planet lies a body of water so vast and violent, it circles the globe without touching land. Here, waves can rise higher than a five-story building, winds howl past 70 miles an hour, and the water temperature hovers just above freezing. Few ships travel this route by choice. Those that do know one truth. If something goes wrong here, help is days away. For centuries, sailors spoke of these waters with awe and fear. They called them the Roaring Forties, the Furious Fifties, and the Screaming Sixties. This is the Southern Ocean, the cold, endless sea that surrounds Antarctica. It's the least explored, least forgiving ocean on Earth, and yet it plays a bigger role in our world than most realize. The Southern Ocean forms a ring around Antarctica, a vast, cold expanse that links the Atlantic, Indian, and Pacific Oceans into one continuous body of water. Its northern limit sits near 60 degrees south latitude, an invisible line that marks the beginning of the coldest waters on Earth. Below that line lies a world shaped by wind, ice, and isolation. What makes this ocean different from every other is its freedom. It circles the planet without hitting land, the only ocean that can. Because of that, its winds never stop, and its swells grow until they become moving walls of water. Those same winds drive the Antarctic Circumpolar Current, a stream so powerful it carries more water than all the world's rivers combined. That current ties the planet's oceans together, redistributing heat and nutrients across the globe. The Southern Ocean covers about 7.8 million square miles, nearly twice the area of the continental United States, but it remains one of the least explored places on Earth. Its scattered islands, South Georgia, the South Orkneys, and the Kerguelen, are small outposts surrounded by hundreds of miles of empty sea. The coast it surrounds is nearly all ice. Massive shelves extend from Antarctica's edge, some hundreds of feet thick, forming floating cliffs that calve into icebergs the size of cities. In winter, sea ice spreads outward, doubling the continent's size. In summer, it retreats again, breaking apart into drifting slabs that make navigation unpredictable. Water temperatures hover just above freezing, between 28 and 32 degrees Fahrenheit, and the nearest port or settlement can be thousands of miles away. Out here, there are no landmarks, no calm shores, only cold air, gray seas, and endless wind. But how did humans first face this place? Who dared to map and cross it, long before weather satellites or icebreakers existed? That story begins with the earliest explorers who entered these waters, many of whom never returned. For centuries, the Southern Ocean was only a theory, a blank space at the bottom of world maps. Ancient geographers believed a vast southern continent, Terra Australis Incognita, must exist to balance the lands of the north. But for most of human history, no one had seen it. That began to change in the age of exploration. By the early 1600s, European navigators searching for trade routes around the Cape of Good Hope and South America began to venture farther south. In 1599, the Dutch navigator Dirk Gerrits claims to have seen snow-covered mountains south of Cape Horn, possibly the first sighting of the Antarctic Peninsula, though his account remains uncertain. Later, explorers like Abel Tasman in 1642 and Edmund Halley in 1700 sailed deep into southern latitudes, battling fierce gales and icy seas. They found no southern continent, only endless ocean and freezing winds. It was becoming clear that the bottom of the world was water, not land. The first major step toward real mapping came in the 1770s with Captain James Cook. During his second voyage, Cook crossed the Antarctic Circle three times and charted thousands of miles of previously unknown waters. In January 1773, aboard HMS Resolution and Adventure, he crossed the Antarctic Circle, coming within 80 miles of land before ice forced him back. Cook wrote that the ice extended east and west farther than the eye could reach, calling it a country doomed by nature to perpetual frost. His charts and descriptions laid the foundation for every Southern Ocean map that followed. In the 19th century, sealing and whaling ships pushed exploration even farther. They discovered remote islands, South Georgia, the South Orkneys, and the South Sandwich Islands, and used them as bases for harvesting seals and whales. In 1820, three expeditions, British under Edward Bransfield, Russian under Fabian Gottlieb von Bellingshausen, and American under Nathaniel Palmer, each claimed the first sighting of the Antarctic continent within months of one another. By then, the Southern Ocean was no longer a myth. It had become a frontier. As the 1800s closed, scientific missions replaced commercial ones. The Challenger expedition, 1872-76, gathered the first oceanographic data from these waters, measuring depth, temperature, and currents across thousands of miles. It was the beginning of modern ocean science, and much of what we know about the deep ocean today can be traced back to that voyage. But those early explorers sailed in wooden ships with no engines, no radio, and no protection from the cold. The question is, what drove them into seas where survival often depended on luck alone? That answer lies in the next chapter, the age of sealing, whaling, and the early industries that risked everything in the far south. When the explorers returned home with tales of rich wildlife in the far south, traders and hunters soon followed. By the late 1700s, the Southern Ocean had become a new frontier, not for discovery, but for profit. The first industry to take hold was sealing. Ships from Britain and the United States began arriving at remote islands like South Georgia, the South Shetlands, and the Kerguelen Islands. Seals were killed for their pelts and oil, used to make lamps burn brighter and leather goods last longer. Within just a few decades, millions were slaughtered, driving some species to near extinction. Life for the crews was brutal. They lived in tents or crude huts made from stones and seal skins, surrounded by freezing seas and constant wind. When the seal populations collapsed in the early 1800s, attention turned to a much larger target, whales. At first, the focus was on sperm whales in the warmer sub-Antarctic waters. But by the early 1900s, industrial whaling had pushed deep into the Southern Ocean itself. The introduction of steam-powered ships, explosive harpoons, and floating factories changed everything. Whales could now be hunted far from shore and processed at sea. Whaling stations on islands like South Georgia became massive operations, complete with workshops, storage tanks, and housing for hundreds of workers. Norwegian whalers led much of this expansion, followed by British and later Japanese fleets. For the men who worked there, the pay was modest and the conditions extreme. Ice, machinery, and storms made every task dangerous. Ships were often damaged by icebergs or caught in sudden gales. The smell of rotting blubber hung in the air, and frostbite was common. But the demand for whale oil, used for lighting, lubricants, and margarine, made the risk seem worthwhile. By the mid-20th century, industrial whaling had pushed many species to collapse. Blue whales, once abundant, were hunted in such numbers that fewer than 1% remained by the 1960s. International bans came too late to save most of the industry, and the last South Georgia whaling station closed in 1965. What remained were abandoned buildings, rusting boilers, and graves scattered across the islands. Silent reminders of a time when men chased profit to the edge of the world. But the same winds that carried these ships south also revealed the ocean's true nature. Beyond the harbors and whaling stations lay a world ruled by storms, ice, and waves that few could survive. The Southern Ocean has a reputation earned through centuries of hard sailing. Its dangers don't come from one single source. They come from everything happening at once. Storms arrive fast, often with no warning. A ship can move from steady conditions to a heaving, chaotic deck in minutes. Cold fronts sweep across the water without slowing, dropping visibility to nothing and turning a manageable sea into a violent one. Waves here are unpredictable. They don't always follow a pattern, and crews have long reported sudden walls of water rising out of an otherwise regular swell, the kind that can roll a vessel onto its side or smash through its superstructure. Modern ships are stronger than the wooden hulls of the old expeditions, but even steel can be pushed past its limits. Cold adds its own threat. Spray freezes on railings, ladders, and rigging, making simple movement dangerous. Ice can build up on the upper decks until a ship becomes top-heavy, forcing crews to work in the open to knock it free before stability is compromised. A person who falls overboard has almost no chance. The water strips away body heat so quickly that survival is measured in minutes. Communication is often unreliable. Satellites can struggle with weather interference, and storms disrupt long-range signals. A vessel in trouble may get a message out, or it may not. Even today, rescue aircraft and ice-capable ships face long distances and uncertain conditions. Help can't simply appear, it has to fight its way in. These hazards have shaped how mariners view this ocean. Expeditions have been lost, modern ships have suffered heavy damage, and even well-equipped scientific missions have turned back when conditions grew too severe. The Southern Ocean doesn't need a dramatic event to become dangerous. It only needs a moment of weakness or misjudgment. And history shows what happens when that moment arrives. Many vessels never made it back from these waters, their stories scattered across charts, journals, and the seafloor. Some are remembered. Others are still missing. Those losses form the next part of this story. In the late summer of 1819, a Spanish warship named San Telmo left Cadiz with a crew of nearly 650 men. She was a 74-gun ship of the line, bound for Callao, Peru, to help suppress a colonial uprising. The voyage would take her through the newly discovered Drake Passage, the roughest stretch of water on Earth. As the fleet approached Cape Horn, a violent storm scattered the ships. San Telmo was last seen battling hurricane-force winds and massive seas before disappearing into the gray Southern Ocean. Wreckage from the ship later washed ashore on Livingston Island, part of the South Shetlands near the Antarctic Peninsula. No survivors were ever found. If that wreckage truly came from San Telmo, her crew would have been the first humans ever to reach the Antarctic region, decades before official exploration began. It's one of history's eerie possibilities. The first visitors to Antarctica were 650 sailors who never lived to tell the story. The disappearance of San Telmo marked a grim start to the age of Antarctic exploration, a reminder that before any scientific mission or heroic expedition, the Southern Ocean was already claiming ships and lives. And as the 20th century dawned, a new generation of explorers would follow the same path, this time not for war, but for discovery. Among them was a vessel called Antarctic. At the turn of the 20th century, exploration of the frozen continent was shifting from guesswork to science. In 1901, the Swedish Antarctic Expedition, led by Otto Nordenskjöld, set sail aboard a small wooden bark named Antarctic. She was built in Norway for sealing and strengthened for ice, but still far from ideal for the conditions she was heading into. For 2 years, Antarctic carried the team between the islands and the Antarctic Peninsula, establishing a winter base and collecting valuable data. In early 1903, after dropping supplies, the ship tried to return for the men left on Snow Hill Island, but the ice closed in faster than expected. Trapped and slowly crushed, Antarctic drifted helplessly before the pressure tore her hull apart. The crew abandoned ship and struggled across the pack ice to reach Paulette Island, where they survived that brutal winter, living on penguins and building a stone hut for shelter. Months later, Nordenskjöld's stranded shore party reunited with the survivors by sheer luck. Against impossible odds, every member of the expedition lived. The loss of Antarctic was a setback, but it proved how skill, timing, and luck could make the difference between survival and another forgotten shipwreck. But not every story in these waters ended so well. Just a few years later, another vessel met her fate, not in the ice, but on the black cliffs of the Auckland Islands. In March 1907, the British steel bark Dundonald was nearing the end of a long voyage from Sydney to London. She carried a load of wheat and a crew of 28 men. To save time, her captain decided to pass close to the Auckland Islands, a remote, wind-beaten archipelago in the Southern Ocean, roughly 300 miles south of New Zealand. That decision sealed their fate. Thick fog rolled in, and without accurate bearings, the Dundonald struck the cliffs of Disappointment Island. The ship broke apart almost instantly in the pounding surf. Only 17 members of the 28 crew managed to escape the wreck and reach shore. The survivors clung to the jagged rocks and somehow reached the island's shore with almost nothing, no food, no fire, and no tools. Disappointment Island offered little mercy. The winds were constant, the cold unrelenting, and there was almost nothing edible. For the first days, they survived on raw seabirds caught by hand. Later, they managed to kill albatross and shearwaters for food, using bird bones as needles to stitch rough clothing from the skins. With no wood for shelter, they dug holes in the peat and roofed them with sod and feathers. It was primitive, filthy, and barely kept them alive. Months later, when their strength was fading, four of the men built a raft from the wreckage and driftwood, little more than a few lashed together timbers. They rowed through freezing seas to nearby Auckland Island, where they knew there was an old supply depot left for shipwreck survivors. Miraculously, they made it. Once they reached the cache, they raised a flag and built a signal fire, but it took another 3 months before a government vessel finally spotted the smoke and rescued them. Only 15 of the 28 men who left Sydney ever saw home again. The Dundonald tragedy was one of the worst in New Zealand's maritime history, and it reminded sailors that even in the 20th century, much of the Southern Ocean remained beyond the reach of help. A few years later, in those same cold waters, another ship would face a similar fate, not from rocks, but from the crushing power of ice. Few shipwrecks in history have captured the world's imagination like Endurance. In August 1914, Sir Ernest Shackleton and his 27-man crew set sail from England, aiming to make the first land crossing of Antarctica. Their goal was bold: reach the Weddell Sea, land on one side of the continent, and march across to the Ross Sea on the other. But the Weddell Sea is one of the most treacherous parts of the Southern Ocean. Within weeks of entering the pack ice, Endurance was surrounded. Her wooden hull, though reinforced for ice, was no match for the crushing pressure. For nearly 10 months, the ship drifted, locked in ice, while Shackleton and his men camped aboard, hoping for a thaw. Instead, the ice closed in tighter. By October 1915, the timbers groaned, split, and finally gave way. Endurance was crushed and sank beneath the ice, leaving the men stranded hundreds of miles from land. With no radio and no chance of rescue, they hauled their lifeboats across the ice to the open sea. After months of hardship, they reached the desolate Elephant Island, the first solid ground they'd seen in over a year. Knowing survival depended on help, Shackleton chose five men and one small boat, the James Caird, and set out on a desperate 800-mile journey to South Georgia through some of the roughest seas on Earth. It took 2 weeks of non-stop sailing in freezing storms, but they made it. Shackleton then crossed the island's mountains on foot to reach the old whaling stations and organize a rescue. By August 1916, every man from the Endurance was alive. Their ship was gone, but their story became one of the greatest sagas of survival in maritime history. For decades, the wreck's exact location remained a mystery beneath miles of ice. Then, in 2022, a search team finally found her, perfectly preserved on the sea floor of the Weddell Sea, upright and frozen in time. The Endurance proved that in the Southern Ocean, even success often begins with disaster. And in the very same year she sank, another vessel met her fate, one consumed not by ice, but by fire. In early 1915, the Norwegian factory ship Governoren was deep in the waters off the Antarctic Peninsula. She was one of the largest whaling vessels of her time, a floating factory that processed whales at sea, saving long trips back to the shore stations. After months of hard work, her holds were full of whale oil, a fortune by the standards of the day. The crew celebrated the end of the season, and, as the story goes, a lamp was knocked over during a party. The fire spread quickly through the oil-soaked decks. Realizing the ship was doomed, the captain ran Governoren aground on the coast of Wilhelmina Bay to save his crew. Flames tore through the vessel, sending thick smoke into the frozen sky. All 85 men escaped safely to the shore, where they were later rescued by another whaling ship. The burnt wreck of Governoren still lies there today, rusted, half buried in snow, and occasionally visible through the ice. It's one of the most accessible Antarctic wrecks, often visited by expedition cruises. From that smoldering ruin to a modern tragedy, nearly a century later, another vessel, built for tourism and exploration, would meet a similar fate in the same remote waters. In November 2007, the MV Explorer was cruising through the icy waters near the South Shetland Islands, carrying 154 people, mostly tourists eager to see Antarctica up close. She was a small expedition ship, but famous for her history. Built in 1969, she was the first vessel ever constructed specifically for Antarctic tourism. On November 23rd, just before dawn, she struck submerged ice near the Bransfield Strait. The collision tore a hole in her hull, and water began to flood in faster than her pumps could handle. The captain sent a distress call and ordered the passengers to abandon ship. In the freezing darkness, inflatable lifeboats drifted among the icebergs, while the Explorer slowly listed and sank. Everyone, passengers and crew, was rescued by a Norwegian ship, Nordnorge, several hours later. No lives were lost. The loss of the MV Explorer shocked the world of polar travel. It showed that even with modern technology, the Southern Ocean still leaves no room for mistakes. The wreck now rests 4,200 feet below the surface, a silent warning to every ship that dares to cross these waters. For all its cold and fury, the Southern Ocean supports some of the most productive waters on Earth. Beneath its surface lies an entire world of life, driven by one tiny creature, krill. These shrimp-like animals gather in swarms so dense they can be seen from space. Every major predator here depends on them, directly or indirectly. Blue whales, the largest animals ever known, migrate thousands of miles to feed on krill each summer. Humpbacks and fin whales do the same, devouring tons of them every day during the brief Antarctic season. Elephant seals dive more than a mile deep in search of squid, while leopard seals patrol the ice edges, hunting penguins with speed and precision. The bird life is just as remarkable. Wandering albatrosses soar for weeks without landing, riding the endless winds that circle the continent. Petrels, skuas, and terns fill the sky, and on land, colonies of penguins stretch as far as the eye can see. Emperor, Adelie, Chinstrap, and Gentoo, each adapted to survive in its own way. Beneath the ice, fish and invertebrates thrive in near-freezing water, thanks to natural antifreeze proteins in their blood. This harsh environment has produced species found nowhere else on the planet. But the balance is fragile. Overfishing of krill and the warming of Antarctic waters are already altering migration patterns and breeding cycles. Scientists have recorded shrinking sea ice in key feeding areas, forcing some species farther south each year. International protections now regulate fishing and tourism, but the future of this ecosystem depends on how well those measures hold as the world continues to warm. For now, the Southern Ocean remains one of the last truly wild places on Earth, a reminder that life can endure, even where survival seems impossible. And it's this living frontier that modern explorers, scientists, and travelers now come to witness firsthand. After centuries of sealing ships, whalers, and lost expeditions, the Southern Ocean began to change. By the mid-20th century, its focus shifted from exploitation to exploration. Scientists from around the world established research bases across the Antarctic coastline, studying climate, ocean currents, and marine life. The 1950s and 60s marked the start of a new era, the International Geophysical Year, and the signing of the Antarctic Treaty. For the first time, nations agreed that this frozen region would be used for peace and science, not for war or profit. That treaty remains one of the strongest examples of international cooperation on Earth. Today, research ships operate year-round in these waters, measuring temperature, salinity, and the thickness of sea ice. Their work has revealed how much the Southern Ocean shapes global weather and absorbs vast amounts of carbon dioxide. What happens here affects coastlines and climates everywhere else. Tourism arrived soon after. In the late 1960s, small vessels began carrying passengers to see the penguin colonies, glaciers, and the remains of old whaling stations. What started as an experiment has grown into a seasonal industry of thousands of visitors each year, most arriving from South America. Strict regulations now limit where ships can go, how close they can get to wildlife, and how many people can land at once. Still, even modern ships with reinforced hulls and GPS navigation must respect these waters. Ice, fog, and isolation remain as dangerous as they were in Shackleton's day. The Southern Ocean may be more studied and better known than ever before, but its power hasn't changed. And as the planet warms, that power could shape our future in ways we're only beginning to understand. The future of the Southern Ocean depends on balance between exploration and preservation, science and exploitation. Rising temperatures are already reshaping this region. Warmer waters are melting Antarctic ice faster than expected, changing global sea levels and ocean currents. As ice retreats, new areas open for fishing and potential resource exploration, creating political and environmental challenges. Krill populations, the base of the Antarctic food web, are showing early signs of decline in some regions, likely due to shifting ice cover and industrial harvesting. If they collapse, the effects will echo through the entire ecosystem, from penguins and seals to the great whales. Scientists warn that what happens here won't stay here. The Southern Ocean drives much of Earth's climate system, and even small changes can influence weather patterns across the globe. Still, there is hope. Strict international agreements, satellite monitoring, and expanding marine protected areas are helping to limit human impact. The Antarctic Treaty System continues to safeguard this ocean for research and peace, though future political and economic pressures may test that commitment. For now, the Southern Ocean remains one of the few places where nature still dominates. But its fate will depend on decisions made far from its icy waters, in boardrooms, parliaments, and laboratories around the world. Because this isn't just the future of one ocean. It's the future of the planet's balance itself. The Southern Ocean is more than a stretch of water surrounding a frozen continent. It's a force that shapes weather, drives ocean currents, and connects every sea on Earth. For centuries, it has tested explorers, claimed ships, and challenged everything humanity thought it understood about survival. From the sealing gangs on the South Shetland and Auckland Islands, to Shackleton's desperate voyage aboard the Endurance, from forgotten wrecks swallowed by storms to modern research stations scanning the sky for climate data, every era has left its mark on these waters. The ocean itself, though, remains unchanged in its nature. Its winds still roar through the latitudes sailors once called the Roaring Forties and Furious Fifties. Its waves still rise stories high, and its cold still seeps into steel and bone alike. But in that hostility lies beauty. Beneath the ice, life thrives. Whales, krill, and fish bound together in one of Earth's richest ecosystems. Above, seabirds cross endless skies, tracing routes older than memory. The Southern Ocean may appear empty, but it's very much alive, a heartbeat pulsing at the planet's edge. And perhaps that's why it continues to draw us. Every expedition, every dive, every crossing of the Drake Passage carries the same question. How far can we go before the sea reminds us who's in charge? The world's maps may be complete now, but here, where ice meets storm, there's still mystery left. The Southern Ocean remains what it has always been, wild, unforgiving, and endlessly fascinating.